Well, you know, the kicks have been made, right? I think, you know, with Tyler, the thing we understand is when we brought him in and we looked at him, the dude has a strong leg, right? And he's sound. He kicks the ball the way we want to kick the ball, and he's been consistent, right? And that's what we're looking for. John, when you look at him, he's been consistent, and when you watch him over his college career, he was consistent. He made kicks, and that was the kind of guy that we went out and said, okay, let's bring in two guys that, you know what, they're consistent in what they do. One might look more powerful than the other one, but the kicks are going in, and that's ultimately what matters the most.
That is special teams coordinator Chris Horton talking on Saturday. I was myself, Beltway Ben, we were out there on Saturday along with Cordell Woodland as the Ravens had their last not padded practice. They're back on the field, excuse me, today after an off day yesterday, and they are in pads. But talking about
the bone is there.
He'll be
bone
checking
is
in
on
with
assignment.
Us. Yes, he'll be checking in with us throughout the afternoon. And talked about the kickers, and that's of course Tyler Loop and John Hoyland. And I will tell you, Jason, he mentioned the strong leg. It doesn't matter what I'm seeing at training camp because it matters games. The ball explodes off his foot. Like, it's all top of the net stuff, and he has yet to miss a kick in camp for what that's worth.
It's an awesome start. I mean, look, again, are you going to hand anybody the job based off this? No. But if one of these guys with no profile came in and started crapping the bed early, guess what? It would be a story, and it might amplify and magnify, and it might be, you know, the proverbial snowball in the wrong direction. So it's a good thing, and I hope they both kick well and continue to bring out the best in each other, and that it proves to be a real competition because both are thriving. I think we know who a tie or anything close to a tie would go to, and that's understandable because you're only going to get so much of a sample size this summer, and you've got to go back to your evaluations on them throughout the totality of their college career. And the things you can quantify, like kicks from distance and kicks with wind and kicks in adverse situations, and also things you can't quantify as much, like to your point about how the ball explodes off the foot and how quickly does it reach its arc. And then there's just things like body language and how they conduct themselves and how confident they seem walking around your building around these premier athletes every day. So, this is a great thing for the organization that so far so good. It's very early days, and there are going to be bumps in the road. This is not going to be a magic carpet ride for either of these young men, I don't think. But this is one of the big stories with this team.
Yes.
The biggest issue with this team is special teams. And it's not particularly close. And it's not just endemic to two no-name kickers. There's a punter involved. There's return units involved. There's coverage units involved. There's individuals who make boneheaded mistakes and penalties. There's a lot to clean up on special teams. But figuring out the kicker situation is certainly a big part of that.
Yeah, kicker's the headline, obviously, because a guy who was arguably the greatest kicker in the history of football was let go unceremoniously as he had off-the-field issues. He's a bit of a creep. So they needed to replace their kicker for the first time since 2012. So that's the headline. But the reality was they four return guys a year ago, and their coverage teams weren't good, and to punt return guys.
Well, across the board, you look at special teams EPA overall effectiveness, only San Francisco was worse, and that's factoring in everything, specialist, return, coverage, all the above. It was a blight for them, and again, it has to improve. It's a focal point of their summer diligence. We've mentioned before, it'll be interesting to see if they jerry-rig situations in these preseason games to put these kickers in positions where that's the most pressure you're going to get simulated is the exhibition games. No, that's nothing like a regular season game with the standings at stake, but it's as close as you're going to get in the meantime. So we will have a fine eye, towards that. They do put a lot of effort into the evaluation part of that. And they have been, you know, we talk about Tucker a lot for obvious reasons, but they've identified other off the grid kickers and punters who've gone on and had decent careers or some semblance of a career or put a little money in their pocket doing this for a long period of time where, let's face it, there was no room at the end here because they had a great punter and they had arguably the greatest kicker ever. So It's not like they stopped evaluating. It's not like they stopped being involved in those the scouting of those specialists. And they did a pretty good job doing that, even when, again, they knew those guys weren't going to make this team unless there was a catastrophic injury.
I'll say this, and I'm curious if Beltway Ben agrees with me on this, but being out there on Saturday, and it was the last day without pads, they're in pads today, frankly, it was... And
you can't get anything out of it.
It was boring because it's like workmen, like they don't have a whole lot of issues. Like, they're, God forbid, injuries, but beyond that... It was not
nothing to extrapolate.
Yes, it was a whole lot of, okay, it's good to see guys on a football field again, but there's not a whole lot. Ben, did you agree? Like, the fact that that Looper was hitting the top of the net every time was kind of cool, but beyond that, what'd you get out of Saturday?
Yeah, the only thing, as you talk about the kicker competition, which feels like it's over, but even that, like, if the Justin Tucker situation didn't happen and you didn't have any drama there, like, there would be nothing. Like, the kicker conversation is really the only thing you're looking for. When they were going live, it was just kind of lazy. Like, they were just going through the motions.
By the way, for people who care about this thing, according to our friend Jess Rubick from The Athletic, not practicing today, Rashad Bateman, Jair Alexander. Bilal Cohn went down early in practice. Looked like he went down on his shoulder. So he's not practicing today, and obviously Emory Jones not practicing. Interesting about Bateman and Alexander because they had an off day yesterday.
And Bateman scheduled to talk.
He was scheduled to talk today. Yes.
Yeah. Hopefully that's just something, I mean, whatever. Something maybe not even football related. Who knows? So we'll obviously get you guys the latest on that. Harbs does talk today, right?
Yes, Harbs talks today, and so he'll talk tomorrow as well. And Bones there.
And Bones on the case.
Yeah, Bones.
And if anybody is going to find out in real time what's going on, it's the Bone and his 500-page – 4 foot by 3 foot marble notebook.
Yes,
he's got a notebook that's bigger than his chest.
Yes, he does know how to cover a camp practice.
Well, or he doesn't.
Or exactly 180 degrees from that.
Correct.
Yes. So,
but he's there.
Yes,
and he's on the case.
And we will hear from him around 3 o'clock. So we have a busy show. We're done early. Orioles and
Hopefully
Blue Jays.
He has something to talk about.
Yes. Orioles and Blue Jays start a 3-day, 4-game series, split doubleheader tomorrow. That first game's at 6:30 tonight, so 5:30 BBT, Ryan Ripken and Bob Haney. Guest-wise, other than the Bone, Bridget Condon, NFL Network, she was out at Ravens camp on Saturday. She'll join us to talk about the Ravens, the NFL at 3:30 from NFL Network. Jim Duquette, we are 3 days
Hall
away from the Ted IA Hall of Famer. First time on the show since being inducted in the Hall of Fame.
This completes the loop, right?
Yes. Everybody
else. We'll have the new class all joining us.
He's a 4.
Yeah, obviously a lot going on with the Orioles this close to the deadline.
Yes, and IA Hall of Famer Jacob Calvin Meyer talking O's at 5.
Big series.
Yeah, Blue Jays.
Big series for the Blue Jays.
Hey, Blue Jays are 5.5
the
games
best team
up
in the American League.
And if not for getting blown out yesterday, and by the way, Scherzer actually low-key pitched well, 7 innings, 11 Ks, but they lose 10-4.
Couldn't hit the general, though. I'm surprised by that.
General. By the way,
cost me some money yesterday. That guy, man, he's still... The general's still on my S list.
Let me ask you a question, because you
that's
were,
General 1.
Yeah,
we got General 1 and General 2.
I want to get to that. You were the person who dubbed Flaherty the general, and then when Tyler O'Neill missed a couple games with General Soreness,
this is catching
people
on.
Started
His
to
legs.
Take your nickname and put it on Tyler
I'm
O'Neill.
Fine
How
with
did
that.
You feel with that?
I think he's very... If there was ever a worthy successor
to
the
sure.
mantra of General Soreness to be handed down from Flaherty to anyone... I think Paul Bunyan's the perfect guy for the job. I think
it's funny. I call him Popeye.
You really could not have constructed a better successor. We had the pitching version of General Soreness. Now we've got the DH version of General Soreness because he ain't an outfielder.
Yeah, he's homering 3 straight games, Jason. Now that the season's over, he's starting to hit. His OPS is better than Colton Cowser's.
Well,
that's saying so. That shows you. That's an indictment on Colton Cowser right there.
Or he's just who I told you he was.
Maybe. He better start getting on base.
He is what he is.
Purple rain in the forecast coming up next. And Saturday was coordinator day. We will hear more from Chris Horton and from Todd Monken next here on The Fan.
You know, I don't think, obviously, going into, you know, you just let the guys that go out and they compete and they work and they get better every day. And I think the idea is what Randy has these guys doing is going to prepare them for the game. And when the winner shows, it's going to show, right? And it ain't going to be, you know, how soon is that going to be? I don't know, you know. But I do know that these guys are going to be out here getting – valuable work every day and in these preseason games. And when it's showing and when it happens, whoever wins that job is going to be the guy that's right for the team.
So that's Chris Horton talking about the kicking competition. We'll hear a lot about that as we go through training camp. Ravens, first day of padded practice today. And as Ben and I said earlier, just based on Saturday, it seems like Tyler Loop has the edge over John Hoyland. But Chris Horton telling you what he wants to see from this kicking battle.
You know, it would be interesting if, you know, we've talked about worst case scenarios quite a bit where they've got to run out week three, week five, whatever, and work out a bunch of guys and hire a new kicker. But, like, there's also a scenario where whoever doesn't win the competition here got a pretty good workout, looked the part, goes somewhere else, and makes it.
Yeah. Well, we've, as you will articulate in the open, we've seen guys here when Tucker was here go get jobs elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it would not be the craziest thing in the world if it were to play out that way as well. It's just there's such a mental component to this, and it's all brand new for these guys. There's no comparison what you're doing in college versus what it's like the first time in an NFL stadium with people's paychecks on the line. And I guess with NIL, right, it's changing a little bit in college. But it's just a different environment. You got guys in that locker room who are 12 and 13 years older than you, who are trying to support their families and, you know, whose jobs are at stake. You just don't know till you get there.
More from Chris Horton speaking on Saturday. What specifically are they looking for in the kicking battle?
You know, I think it's a little bit more than that, right? I think it's all about consistency and everything that we do, and especially at that level, at that position, really at every position, but mainly at that position, right? We want to see kicks made, right? And we want to see good foot to ball contact. And there's a process about how these guys are going about it and where they're kicking from and what they're doing in practices. And the things that Randy is talking to these guys about every day is going to allow for both these guys to have success out on the field.
As I said earlier, I'll say it again if you're just tuning in, the ball does explode off of Tyler Loop's foot for what that's worth.
I'm sure that was a significant part of their evaluation, along with, again, the quantifiable results that he had. And I think Randy Brown is uniquely positioned as one of the – and again, I can remember doing a story at the Washington Post last year, talking to people from teams all over and trying to figure out why more NFL teams with the margins this slim and with more long kicks being attempted than ever, why more teams don't have full-time kicking coaches on staff. But everybody I talked to pointed to Randy Brown – and as a result, John Harbaugh, for bringing him in as early as he did, as being way ahead of the curve with this and being, you know, I can remember talking to Tucker a couple years ago and him saying, I'm not sure if I'm who I am without Randy Brown being here through my entire journey. So they are uniquely positioned to coach these specialists in a way that I'm not sure they get coached up everywhere else.
So let's get to one other aspect of special teams. Oh, and one thing we did discover on Saturday, Keaton Mitchell looks like he has his burst back. Saw him on a couple sweeps. He looks like he looks more like the guy we saw before the horrible knee injury a couple years ago. Well, Chris Horton talks about Keaton Mitchell on special teams.
You know, obviously, Keaton has done a tremendous job for us when he has been back there. So just the body type, the style of play, you know, it took us a while to really figure out, you know, kind of our identity and kind of who we wanted to be as a kickoff return unit. And as the season went on late in the year, those body types, those running back body types, you know, when they're used to bouncing off tacklers, right? And so it allowed for that type of player to really have success back there. But I believe like, a guy with some toughness, a guy that's going to run with speed, with vision, he's going to have success back there for us. But Keaton, man, he's done a heck of a job, and it's really good to see him out here, man, just rolling.
So he did return kicks a year ago, but
I think he should have a role in special teams.
Yes, he should. And we're going to get to Monk talking about Keaton Mitchell's part of the offense in just a minute. But talking to some of the guys that are out there every day, they said it's noticeable the difference in Keaton Mitchell from a year ago.
If he is going to be blocked the way he's obviously blocked in the running back room, and if they have the trepidation that they have, rightfully so, with him in pass protection, and it's such significant reservation that where he could help you the most, probably in the screen game, is obviously undermined by they don't trust him in pass pro. And I get it. With a $50 million quarterback, I get it. Then, yeah, let's spring him loose on special teams. It's great that they drafted this guy and that guy, whatever, but you can't tell me he doesn't have a skill set where he can win inside a telephone booth.
So you mentioned him and blocked his part of the offense. Well, Todd Monken was asked about Keaton Mitchell in the offense, and this is what Monk had to say.
Well, it's great to see him back because I think last year when he came back, he still, in his own mind, I think he wanted to be ready. You'd have to ask him whether he felt that way, was confident in that. And when you don't practice for such a long time, I'm excited to see him every day out here, and I'm excited to see him when we play in the preseason because he's got to fight to get touches. You know, 2 years ago, we didn't have Derek. I mean, let's just say it like it is. Like, it's a fight to get touches in the backfield. Justice Hill's an established, outstanding football player. Now we got Derek. So that third running back position is fighting for reps, fighting for touches, fighting for the ability to be really good as a pass protector, all that above special teams player, just because we're in a different place than we were a year ago. But it's exciting to see him really kind of be up to speed in the first 4 days.
Todd Monken being pretty darn frank. He's like, look, 2 years ago, Derek wasn't
yeah.
here.
And, yeah, I mean, and they extended Derek.
Yep.
So, yeah, let's give him an opportunity to have a meaningful role on special teams if he can earn it.
Don't worry. Coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, we will have a full segment of Todd Monken. Monkey Business is back with Monk talking on Saturday. But coming up next, we get to the Orioles and let's recap the weekend series against the Colorado Rockies. All the young dudes next here on The Fan.
3-2 pitch, and he got him. Tomoyuki Sugano matches his career high with 8 strikeouts here this afternoon facing the Rockies.
So a few starts ago, him and the pitching coach, my understanding is they got in the bullpen and they worked on some stuff, and that's good. It's good coaching. It's what our coaches are. We need them to do right now during this time. And there's an adjustment made, and going back to that Mets start, a few starts now, the velocity's been way up. You know, velocity goes up, makes everything else play good. And he looked confident today. I said that about Rogers yesterday, but he looked different in the first inning.
So you're the highlight courtesy of Masson. Tomoyuki Sugano tied a career high for strikeouts yesterday against the Colorado Rockies with 8. And you could say, well, it was against the crappy Rockies, but Dean Kramer seemed to miss the plot on Friday night as the Orioles had a 4-0 lead but lost Friday. It did take 2 of 3. We'll get to Saturday in a few minutes because that was something special. But Tomoyuki Sugano, Jason, he all but admitted through an interpreter that he thought he might be tipping pitches.
Yes.
He's now had quality starts in 2 of his last 3 starts.
Few things here. He definitely was tipping pitches, for one. He had confidence because he's facing the worst team in modern baseball history, coming off a 18-0 drubbing. And the splitter was effective. Mm-hmm. And the splitter has been fickle for him.
Rockies like to swing, too.
It's been a mercurial pitch. Yeah. And they were chasing, and he kept throwing it. And when he has been on, that pitch has carried the way. And fortunately for him, it's not replicable. It's not something he can count on. It's a touch and feel thing, and it's been more gone than harnessed. I definitely think he was tipping pitches. And
he was very hittable, so that makes sense.
And so, you know, this is nice for him. I think it definitely falls big time in the category of too little, too late.
Does it get him traded?
No. It's a salary dump. This is not a baseball trade.
Yeah.
You want to eat salary to move some salary, and you want to make, you know, you want to play a sleight of hand game, play some 3-card Monty. You could do that.
Sure. Is he
you're
here
not,
on
you're
Thursday?
Not, you're not trading. I don't think so, because I don't think they're going to eat enough.
So you do think he'll be here on Thursday?
Yeah. I don't think they're going to be able to make a baseball trade for him. I can't imagine anybody who's seen his body of work saying, oh, I wonder how that would play in September, still in a 5-man rotation against the best of the best as we fight for playoff position. Like, boy, he really crapped his pants on a team whose season ended like May 21st. Sign me up for looking at that in the Bronx in October. I don't think so.
I want to take a second to talk about Gunnar Henderson yesterday. Gunnar Henderson made
stud game.
Made an excellent. The power's not there this year, but he's hitting. His batting average is up to .282, which you know I love. He also made a great play at shortstop, and the awareness on the wild pitch, he saw the pitcher wasn't covering home plate, so he went all the way from second to score on a wild pitch to give the Orioles the 5-1 lead, which they won by that score.
He had a hell of a game. I hope he can finish strong. I mean, again, I know we talk about baseball like it's this endless marathon. We're coming up on 50 games played yet. We still haven't seen Basayo. We've barely seen Chase McDermott. I know he's banged up again. We haven't seen Dylan Beavers yet. Heston Kjerstad's had a totally lost season. Kobe Mayo's barely played baseball. And Gunnar Henderson often hasn't looked like the best version of Gunnar Henderson that we saw, you know, from what, about the, well, I don't know, May of 2023 till about July of 2024. So you want that. You need that, frankly, as an organization, these guys to feel as good about themselves as they can down the stretch. Gunner, when he's at his best, I think plays carefree. He has he's an incredible athlete with incredible instincts. And when that stuff takes over, he's a dervish. And I think the wind has been knocked out of his sails by, frankly, the utter and gross mismanagement of this franchise. And this is not the season he thought he was signed up for. And I got news for you. If we're as acutely aware of his contract status as we are, so is he.
Yeah.
So I don't think any of this has played out particularly well for him in terms of figuring out what this franchise is, how he fits in with it, and whether he's a guy who's closer to the end of his time here than the beginning, which sounds nuts to be saying for a 23, 24-year-old kid. But Kansas City Royals went and signed another baseball player the other day.
Seth Lugo signed him last night.
After already having Witt done. Like, until or unless anything like that happens around here, how could Gunnar Henderson not look at them as a fraud-ass organization?
Orioles made a few roster moves today. Keegan Aiken reinstated. Adley Rutschman reinstated. Yeramil Geraldo sent down to AAA, and Jacob Stallings designated for assignment. So I assume Adley will be in the lineup tonight.
You would think. Again, obliques are tricky. He did not spend a whole lot of time.
No, they don't like
rehabbing.
They don't like to spend a lot of time.
So we'll see what this looks like and what this means. Nobody needs to salvage these 50 games more than Adley.
Yeah.
And frankly, from an organizational standpoint, like we've talked about, you know, again, Basayo, and we're all going to be excited about that. But, you know, he's a baby. And Beavers, that'll be his first time in the majors. Whether it's Mike Elias, or I pray to God, somebody infinitely more worthy of being this team's GM than Mike Elias, who's evaluating this team starting a week into the offseason, this 50 games, or however many of them that Adley plays in, are going to be imperative to looking at it through this short-term prism and the prism of the totality of his career to this point, and figuring out not where he fits into this organization, but frankly, if he fits into this organization. If his best fit might be if someone from the outside comes in and says, this guy will never be what he was, that, you know, the best 100 games of his career, then you need to move him now. So, and by now I mean the hot stove league or whatever. Well,
off season.
So he, to me, is under the microscope even more than a Jackson Holliday, even more than any of these kids, you know, who come back. Like, okay, Heston, if he's back, if he's still here next Tuesday and he's back up, yeah, I mean, maybe him too. But like, I think Adley is the singular player whose future could be most in the balance based on what he's able to show or not show. Not just to the people already in the warehouse, but again, I hope and pray to some people infinitely wiser and more experienced and more successful than them who might come in and try to put this thing over the top.
Kobe Mayo homered his first home run against an actual pitcher. Remember, his first career home run was off a position player, yeah. But he hit a home run and he's getting extra base hits. And he continues to look comfortable.
Well,
in the
two lefties in three games, you know, so yeah. That made the decision easy for JV. I don't know. You know, four games in 3 days. I would think he'd get a run here, but
yeah.
But you know what? T.O.'s hitting bombs now.
T.O. three home runs in three games.
Yeah. So you know the pecking order.
Yeah. And Ryan Mountcastle
goes T.O., Ramon, then maybe Mayo.
You got to trade Ramon in the next few days, don't you?
I'm talking about the other Ramon.
No, I think
Razor's ahead of him.
No, I think both Ramones.
Both Ramones are, but he's referring to the infield.
Oh, I know. I think they both should be gone in the next 3 days.
That would be great.
Yeah. Like. get rid of the logjam, trade Ramon Urias, like a contending team that wants a utility glove, a guy who's more than adequate at third base. And every time you want to give up on him, he does get a key hit. But like, he should be gone. Like, they need to give Kobe Mayo a runway.
Yeah, and how they handle this Mountcastle thing will be interesting.
Yeah, it's looming, and it's almost foreboding for me, Jason. Because like,
I'm not excited about it.
And congratulations, Cedric Mullins hit his 100th career home run this weekend.
Yes, and I hope he does get to go out with some more fanfare here and do some damage against Toronto. In so much as he's still here, whether he's through that whole series or whatever. Good on Sid.
It's not Beltway, Ben. Bone will be checking in with us from One Winning Drive training camp. First day of pads. Already a scuffle on the field. I guess Dafe Owe and Vincent, the rookie tackle, got into it on the field as the players are in pads today. The Bone will be checking in at 3, so we'll get his firsthand account of what's going on out at training camp. But coming up next, it's worthy of its own segment. Orioles with their largest shutout win ever and Trevor Rogers of it all. That's next here on The Fan.
Yeah, execution-wise and stuff-wise, I think this definitely ranks up there this year. Just constantly mixing, moving the ball in and out. Really just keeping them in between the whole night. I mean, my hat's off to Stallings. He did an unbelievable job back there, so a lot of credit to him.
Trevor Rogers talks about his outing Saturday, and Trevor Rogers, the sample size continues to grow, and he continues to get better. On Saturday, 7 innings, 1 hit, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. The ERA is now 1.49 on the season. As Trevor Rogers gets the win, he's now 4-1. We'll get to the other part of this in a moment. Orioles win 18-0 on Saturday.
I mean, it was a command tour de force performance. It's starting to get to the point where you almost expect it. Like you especially against, let's face it, a team that swings and misses quite a bit and has a lot of deficiencies. And I think they've won 13 times on the road all year. I tip my cap to him. I am simultaneously stunned and stupefied by it, but yet also have reached a point where, like, I wouldn't be betting against him these days. That's
You're
for
betting
sure.
On him?
I wouldn't be fading him. I'm not betting on him yet, but I'm not. I'm certainly done fading him. It's pretty astounding. And again, you can't find one AAA performance that, like, not only like was it not great in its totality. The moments of singular brilliance at the AAA level don't come close to what he's done at the major league level.
No, it that's the biggest surprise of it. It's not like he was mowing people down at Norfolk, and so he gets up here.
Or he had a couple where he was so shelled, yeah. So you looked at the overall numbers like, okay, well, he was, you know, Nolan Ryan 4 out of every 6 start. Like, no, he was pretty much a
mediocre
replacement level AAA pitcher.
Yeah. One other cut from Trevor Rogers after the game. He was asked if he's been surprised by this success.
Yes and no. I mean, there's always that voice in the back of my mind that's like, you know, maybe it's just a fluke, you know, and I've having a lot of, you know, practice on shutting that voice down and just staying within my process, staying within myself. And on the other hand, like, I've prepared for these couple starts since I got traded over here, and obviously we know the whole story from last year and up to this point. You know, I've worked my butt off to get here, and you know, I'm trying to enjoy it but also stay in the moment, because I know how quickly things can turn in this game. So just trying to stay even keel, stay in the middle, appreciate and be grateful for the starts that I do have, but that they go my way, and you know, enjoy it for the next 5 hours or so and then move on to tomorrow.
So we first heard him talk on our friend Dr. Jerry Aloysius Coleman's podcast, yeah. And now hearing him after the game, he lets us in on what's going on with him. He's incredibly likable.
Very insightful, very candid. I feel like this pitching staff, even the little bit that Kyle Gibson was here, and obviously Morton just kind of opens up a vein, good, bad, or indifferent, and lets you in.
Yeah.
It feels like that's become a little bit more of their calling card, right? Kramer's pretty guarded. Sagano's just tough to an interpreter. Yes. You lose a lot of nuance and such. Yeah. And I think he's speaking to his reality, which is he's got to embrace this as his new norm. And again, like, he's not going to have a 1-something ERA for that much longer. But, like, he's closer to brilliant than bust. Like, he's got to at least embrace that. And I think he is, and that's showing. And if he can maintain that, then he's going to be a quality starting pitcher. Again, a run like this might not be replicable next year. It's a long offseason. But it does make it increasingly interesting. What do they do with this guy? Do they believe truly that they fixed him? Or is there a part of them that's saying, my God, this was a guy who we couldn't get people out of AAA 2 months ago. Do we need to sell on this?
What I know is he's now made 8 starts. 7 of them have been, at worst, really good.
Yeah.
And 6 of them have been quality starts. And at least 4 of them have been excellent. 1.49 ERA. I don't know. I'm with you. I don't know how to explain.
I think we kind of know to some degree how they think over there.
Yeah.
And he's had a nice run here, but Kyle Stowers is going to hit 30-some home runs.
Yes.
And this guy's only controllable for 1 more year, and Kyle Stowers is 27 years old.
If they were the Royals, they would extend Trevor.
Well, that's not. I'm not even broaching that topic. But I'm saying, is there a part of them that will want to sell because, you know what I mean? Whatever they get can sort of recoup and offset what they gave away.
Yeah.
I just wonder, because you know how they think.
Yeah.
And they're trying to appease a party of one, right? They've got to keep this billionaire thinking they know what they're doing enough to keep their jobs. That's priority number one for them. Don't think for a second that anything remotely matters to them other than that. That's what they're trying to accomplish above and beyond anything else. If you don't believe me, this is a guy who sat in Milwaukee and said, we got to change the way we do things. And we're sitting here saying, why isn't Kobe Mayo playing? Like, a litany of things that don't back that up.
Yeah.
Including not being proactive enough about selling this team and waiting way too long to wave the white flag. So don't get it twisted. They will do whatever they think they have to do to keep their jobs.
Let's take a moment to talk about the other aspect of this game Saturday night. It was the largest shutout win in franchise history. They won 18-0. The big 9-run seventh inning was the capper in this one.
I mean, I felt like a beer league softball game. I mean, is 9 going to be enough? Is 12 going to be enough? Is 18 going to be enough? It was just one of those nights where, again, there hadn't been a whole lot to celebrate this year.
No.
And for a guy like Sed having a part in that, and, you know, that's great. Colorado Rockies are the worst team in modern MLB history. Like, we just need to, you know, for those who don't pay attention to baseball at large, they are an incredibly historically significant failure of a baseball team.
Yes, they are. Orioles take 2 or 3 from the Rockies, and things are getting switched up a little bit as they go from the worst team maybe in the history of baseball to currently the best team in the American League. The Blue Jays coming to town. They play 4 games in 3 days. Tonight gets things started, 6:30, first pitch, 5:30, BBT live from Pickles. It's Bob Haney and Ryan Ripken. And coming up next, we head out to one winning drive. First day of padded practice, and guess what? Bone is there. He checks in with us next here on The Fan.